Live from our nation's capital, it's the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine, reporting live from the Center for American Progress in Washington, D.C. Last week, I had a show that I think many folks liked a lot. It was called What We Believe In, and I talked about all the basic principles that I thought that we progressives and Democrats generally share and where they come from. I talked about how many of them stem from the Declaration of Independence and the belief that all men and women are created equal, and how we Democrats, we progressives, are all looking at helping our communities, helping us achieve a more perfect union, helping, if we're all created equal, helping each of our fellow man and woman achieve all they could achieve. And I talked at length about what policies came out of that. Well,
sorry,
today
I'm having trouble with a connection.
Oops. Well, today we are going to focus on what they believe in, what people who oppose us believe in. And the thrust of my argument, and I'll give it away, it's kind of my thesis, and then I'll explain, is that while we are trying to look out for our communities, we are trying to look out for our fellow human beings, I think the heart of the conservative philosophy is, I want mine. Give it to me. A kind of selfishness, and I think with a capital S, one that even some are proud of, that very much infects their daily living. If Democrats are looking to love one another, Republicans are looking to fear one another. Now, we all have love. We all have fear. We all do things for ourselves. We all do things for others. But I think it's that mix. It's that balance. That is the basic philosophical difference between us. One of the headliners of this show that I joke about is people confuse me with right-wing talk radio host Mark Levin. He spells his last name L-E-V-I-N. I spell mine L-E-V-I-N-E. And people confuse us all the time. And I tell folks that the second E stands for empathy, which Mark Levin lacks. And people laugh. And it's kind of a fun joke. And frankly, it's an easy way for people to remember, oh, the conservative, he's the one that lacks that empathy. He lacks that E. He has no empathy for others. Whereas progressives, I think, as part of our natural constitution, we have empathy for others. It's kind of what we're all about. So it's a joke, but it's a joke with an edge. It's a joke with some meaning. And I'd be the first to agree that we must look out for ourselves as well as others. The great Jewish philosopher Hillel wrote about a century before Jesus of Nazareth his great three questions. And the questions are, if I am not for myself, who will be for me? But if I am only for myself, what am I? And if not now, when? And by asking these three questions, this great philosopher really distilled down for me the essence of what a moral philosophy is, the essence of what ethics are, the essence of really the human existence, why we do things that we do here as we live. It's really a very profound quote, and many think that it influenced the philosophy of Jesus of Nazareth, who would be on earth a century or so later. So the first question, if I am not for myself, who will be for me? Is a very powerful and important question. We must stand up for ourselves. If we are unwilling to stand up for ourselves, how can we expect others to stand up for us? We have got to be there for ourselves. We've got to do what we can to help ourselves when we can. And when we're being abused or persecuted, we need to stand up. We need to say, me too. We need to tell our stories. We need to call out for help when we need it. And we need to fight to the extent we can for ourselves. To me, self-reliance is important. We must believe in ourselves. And we can't expect others to love us if we don't love ourselves. So if I am not for myself, who will be for me? A very profound question, and something I think that good moral people believe in. We must be for ourselves. We must look out for ourselves. Look out for number one, as it were. But that's not necessarily a bad thing. Again, if you have no hope in yourself, if you have no belief in yourself, if you don't think that you can achieve great things, you probably won't. It's kind of hard to achieve great things by accident. To achieve important things, you've got to work for it. You've got to believe in yourself. You've got to believe that you can get it. And if you don't have that belief in yourself, you're probably not going to achieve anything. I absolutely agree with the first sentence of Hillel's three-part question. What's the second sentence, though? The second sentence is, if I am only for myself, what am I? You see, you should look out for yourself. But if you're only for yourself, what are you? I think Hillel's saying, you're a monster. You're a terrible person. If you only care about yourself, if all your focus, all your energy is how can I help me, what kind of human being are you? We talked last week about how all of us are born helpless babies and all of us go into the night, we die helpless as well. We have people who help us when we're born. We have people who help us as we're dying. How can we not help others when they are being born, when they are dying? Selfishness is selfish, and we think of selfishness as a bad thing. The heart of what I'm going to focus on today is Hillel's question number two. If I am only for myself, what am I? I would argue the essence of conservative philosophy is to only be about themselves, to only say, what's good for me? How does it help me? If John F. Kennedy said, ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country. Ronald Reagan says, ask not what you can do for your country, ask what your country can do for you. How can you pocket? How can you profit? And if you have no moral compunction whatsoever, you can profit any way you can. It can be by fraud, can be by corruption, can be by pollution. You want to know the essence of Trumpism? The essence of Trumpism is selfishness. And I'm going to make that argument for the rest of the show. Let me quickly, though, address Hillel's third quote. If not now, when? There's no more rousing four words that I can think of put together. If not now, when? What are you waiting for? What are you waiting for? If you can't do it now, when? Give me a date. Give me a time. Life is about, what's it about for you? Is it about family? Is it about a job? Is it about making money? Or is it about making a difference, making society a better place? And if you agree that that's what you need to do, if not now, when? Get up. Get to work. The world's an extremely imperfect place. And we have a lot to do. As I said, though, I want to focus most of my time on the second question. If I'm only for myself, what am I? Because I really think that that is the essence of what conservatism is about. Look at liberal tropes. Look at progressive tropes. Look at Hillary Clinton, right? It takes a village to raise a child. Hillary Clinton understands that a child does not make their way onto earth by themselves. Indeed, we are such social creatures that a baby born in a forest with no help will surely die. Sorry, is it Tarzan, I think, where the animals helped him out? All right, but that's a book. a baby can't get food for themselves. A baby can't even speak. If a child is unsocialized and has no one to speak to him or her, how will they learn language? How will they learn basic values? They will grow up to be, frankly, less than animals. Animals have more instincts, frankly, than humans do, naturally. One of the reasons, by the way, if you're interested, is human beings are uniquely helpless when we're born. Far more so than almost any creature on Earth, right? A baby calf is born, baby horse, and they're walking within a day or two. We take a year. Other creatures can run away or achieve self-sufficiency very quickly, not us. Why do you think that is? There's actually an evolutionary reason for it. The evolutionary reason has to do with the nature of our brains and our bodies. Because humans have a much bigger head, specifically a much larger brain, as a percentage of our body mass than almost any creature on the planet, I think more than any other. And that's good for us, right? It's important. That's why we can philosophize. That's why we can think. That's why we can listen to radio shows and have podcasts and go on Facebook. You don't see many chimps doing that, even though they're our closest relatives in the animal kingdom. That brain size means a very large head. And it's got to be hard to protect the brains. And that hard head has to go through a very tiny birth canal. That's why birth is so painful for humans, probably more painful than other animals. A big head going through a small birth canal. And if the baby grows too big, we have to do other things. My first cousin just gave birth. And they told her that if the baby, the fetus, were to go, she was past her due date. And if the fetus was going to be there after another week or two, they had to induce labor, lest they otherwise have to cut and do cesarean. The head gets to be too big for the birth canal. This, of course, is an ancient human practice, dates back to Julius Caesar. That's where cesarean comes from, who was born that way. It's extremely painful, of course, for the woman. Not as much today, certainly in Caesar's day. But the point is this. Because we've got to get a big head through a narrow birth canal, evolutionarily, we are born a lot more helpless than other animals. Most human development, well, I won't say most because it's hard to define most, but a ton of human development, brain development, body development, occurs outside the womb. Humans need other humans to survive. We are uniquely social creatures. That's true as a matter of science. It's true as a matter of evolution. So the fact that you need others seems to me to lead to one of two philosophical conclusions. Either others helped you, therefore I will help others. That's the progressive conclusion. That's also the conclusion, by the way, of every respectable religion I know of. It's certainly the conclusion of Judaism, Christianity, Islam, Buddhism, Hinduism, Baha'i, Shintoism, virtually every major religion I know of, maybe not a few cults. But there is a counter-narrative. It's the one I described last week as I got mine, Jack. Ha ha, you helped me. Thank you. I will keep that now, and I won't help anyone else. You might call it Trumpism. Another name for that philosophy is the virtue of selfishness. That was the name that philosopher Ayn Rand gave it in the tome she wrote in the 1950s called Atlas Shrugged, a 1,084-page book of conservative morality that my Harvard roommate forced me to read if I wanted to continue arguing politics with him, because he was a conservative. And as much as I did not want to read that book, I'm glad I did. That book, I think, truly explains conservative philosophy. There's a reason why Paul Ryan hands it out to all of his interns. And I want to talk about Ayn Rand's philosophy and conservative philosophy right after the break. We'll be right back right after this.
Never confuse Mark Levine with right-winger Mark Levin. The second E stands for empathy, which the other Mark lacks. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275.
Yeah.
And now, the voice of reason in an unreasonable world, Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. How do human beings make moral choices? Sound like a difficult question to answer? Well, it is. It is. Sometimes I think you have to ask that question. Not what choices we make. People describe the choices they make and they say, oh, it's because of this, it's because of that. And that's true. People base some of their choices on facts. They base some of their choices on tradition. Well, we do it this way because we've always done it this way. Because my mom did it this way. My dad did it this way. My teachers did it this way. My boss did it this way. I do it this way because it just seemed like the right thing to do. Those aren't moral choices. There is something about adhering to tradition. Hey, they made the moral choices, and so I just do what they did. But that's not a moral choice. That's opting out of a moral choice. When you have to make a moral choice, how do you make it? How do you decide what to do? I would argue that every moral decision we make is filtered through a couple lenses. What does this do for me? What does this do for others? And it depends on the power of your filter. I think progressives have a filter that mostly asks, how does this help my community? What does this do for others? How can we help others? What can we do to make the world a better place? How can I look out for my neighbors and my friends and my country? And, yeah, what will it do for me too? I think conservatives flip the emphasis. Their focus is, what will this do for me? How will this help me? How can I get mine? How can I preserve mine? How can I keep those other people from taking what's mine? Mine, mine, mine! Oh, and yeah, maybe it can help others too. Maybe others like me. Because I only want to help others like me. Because I'm all about me. This me-ism, otherwise known as objectivism, that's what Ayn Rand called it, or the virtue of selfishness, she wrote in her books, capital V, capital S, is quite honestly, quite directly, what conservatives look to. Paul Ryan, and it's hard to think of a more typical conservative than Paul Ryan, the Speaker of the House, who's leaving this year, would give all his interns copies of Ayn Rand's manifesto, Atlas Shrugged. 1,084 pages that, while I wouldn't wish it on anyone, I'm glad I read it. I still remember this book that I read back in college many, many years ago. I marked it up. I have notes in the margin. I still have my original book. I'm glad I read it. The book has a hero who only looks out for himself, doesn't give a damn about others. His whole book is how to help himself. And her philosophy is, if everybody helps themselves, everyone else will just steal, right? Eat heartily, your crumbs will fall on the floor. That would be trickle-down economics. So sometimes we do have to look out for ourselves, right? If we change lanes in traffic and take the lane that's less crowded, the road goes smoother. There are times to look out for yourself. I agree. Hillel's maxim, if I am not for myself, who will be for me? But I'm only for myself. What am I? What am I? If I'm only for myself, I'm a conservative. I'll be right back right after this.
Back to the Aggressive Progressive, Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine, talking about how we make moral choices. Last week we talked about what we believe in. This week we're going to talk about what they believe in. And I've argued that progressives believe in making the world a better place. We actually see it as our job to do so. We see it as our principle. Again, I can cite my Jewish philosophy. There's a saying that says, it's not your duty to complete the work, but it is your duty to do your part. We feel we have an obligation to help out others. Conservatives, I would argue, are much more about helping themselves. They're fearful. If our philosophy is based on love, theirs is based on fear. Watch out. They're coming to get us. It could be the minorities. It could be the elites. It could be I don't know what it is. It could be the monsters, the Mexicans. I don't know. But we have to protect everything we can. We have to preserve everything we can, lest they get it from us. And both are human emotions. But I'd like to look at some of the things that the Trump administration does in this lens. Take Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. Democrats, progressives believe the government has a role to protect people from fraud. Republicans believe that if someone defrauds you, tough being you, let the fraud continue. Democrats believe in clean air and clean water, that companies shouldn't pollute. Republicans say, if the company makes a bunch of money polluting, then throw that arsenic in the water. Let the heavy metals, let people drink the sludge. Let the people in Flint, Michigan drink dirty water. It's not my problem. It's not my children. It doesn't affect me. And so when it comes to regulation, Republicans say, don't regulate. Get off the backs of businesses. If businesses want to lie, cheat, steal, that's their right. Buyer beware. If Donald Trump doesn't want to pay for things, that's their problem. If you can get away with it, it's okay. Do what you can to pad your pockets. And so we see not just Pruitt, not just Ben Carson, but virtually all of Donald Trump's cabinet secretaries and others working for him that he hired, including people like Mike Flynn and others, they're all about profiting themselves. And why not? They get their philosophy from the top. That's what Donald Trump is about. That's what his family is about. Get what you can, take what you can, grab what you can. It's why you find that Republicans tend to want, quote, less government, unquote. The more we have a society that acts like Somalia, and I use Somalia as an example of a failed state, a state where there's largely anarchy. There is no strong central government. Everyone has a bunch of guns. Everyone steals everything they can from each other. There are no laws. You grab what you can. Republicans would argue that's the basic state of nature. Grab what you can, steal what you can, beat what you can. Why should we care if men abuse women? If men are stronger than women, then that's nature. Thomas Hobbes, famous conservative, argued that life is nasty, brutish, and short. Life is hell. Life is terrible. Grab what you can, get what you can before you die. And that's a compelling philosophy if you believe in the virtue of selfishness. So the tax cuts, you know, you get what you can. And it doesn't matter if you're already rich and you want more. Grab what you can, because those people, those dangerous people, those other people, those people who aren't like we conservatives, they're going to just try and grab it themselves. In fact, you'll find, I think, the conservatives impute their philosophy to others. Oh, they're racist against blacks? They presume blacks are racist against whites, right? They are, they mistreat women. They presume that everyone mistreats women or that women mistreat men. If you fear everybody, then you presume that everybody fears each other. And that is a state of nature. It is anarchy. It is less government. Democrats, if anything, progressives err on the other side. We want orderly government. We want people looking out for each other. We want people taking care of each other. We support seatbelts so you don't kill yourself. We support food for the hungry. Even if you're not, don't have the best job in the world, we still don't think your kids should starve because we believe that all men are created equal. For the conservatives, it's, well, look at the monarchy that America fought against, right? If you look at the British monarchy, particularly in the 18th century, you find a very strict caste system. And it's not just the British. Obviously, India had a strict caste system as well. So it's not unique to Western culture. But in a monarchy, in a hierarchy, you know your place. You're born into a royal family, you're awfully lucky. You're born into nobility, that's pretty good. You're born into the peasantry, tough luck, guy. You're born into slavery, well, I'm afraid you have no rights. It's a very strict caste system. And as I argued last week, even though we still had slaves in America, even though Jefferson had slaves, the words that he wrote are more profound than the life that he led. All men are created equal. All of mankind is created equal. But in a strict hierarchical society, you know your place, right? You don't get uppity, which is what people accused blacks fighting for the civil rights of getting. You don't try to get out of your lane. You know where you stand. You stand power or no power. Today, those strictures are less those of class than those of cash, money. Born into a rich family, born into a poor family. No one feels more entitled than Donald Trump, except maybe Donald Trump Jr. The irony is that the very royalty we fought against, the very royalty and hierarchy and classism that they had in England and in France, French Revolution, that we fought against, today, royals feel a need to give back. There's so much democratic pressure. The pendulum's swung so far that the royalty of England, in order to justify its existence, has to give back to charity. They have to focus on giving back, and when they don't, they're routinely attacked. But the royalty of money? How much does Donald Trump give back? Trumpism is all about looking out for oneself and oneself only. But in doing so, it's just a more pernicious form of conservatism. It's not that different from Paul Ryan. When you have tax cuts where a third goes to shareholders abroad and two-thirds go to rich people in America and the poor suffer because of it, who could support that? Other than, I guess, another billionaire, but specifically a selfish billionaire, not someone like Warren Buffett or Bill Gates or Jeff Bezos, who give their time and energy and lots of money to a number of causes. But it really doesn't matter what you look at. Look at guns. Why do conservatives want every last insane criminal to have access to a gun? Because of the lens they're looking at. Democrats see a gun, see a weapon of war, see an AR-15, see a weapon that can kill hundreds of people in a matter of minutes. And we say, why does society need that? That doesn't make sense. That doesn't make society a better place. That doesn't make our world a better place. That's really dangerous. Those dead kids, whom I don't know their names, in Santa Fe, Texas, or Parkland, Florida, I don't know their names. But I feel for them. My heart goes out to them. I feel their pain. I cry when I watch it on TV. I care about them. Take that same question and run it through a conservative lens. They're not asking why does society need all these guns. They're saying, why do I need all those guns? It's all about me. I need these guns because people are dangerous and they're out to get me and I fear them. And if I want to go and strut around and be, you know, my racist self, I don't want someone attacking me for it. It's all about me. Maybe about my family. And I want a gun because I don't trust the police. And I don't trust other people. And I don't trust my country. I don't trust society. I don't even trust the military. I want to take on the military if I have to. I don't trust anybody. That's why I need a gun. That's why I need an AR-15. That's why I need a tank. That's why I need my own personal stash of nuclear weapons. They're not thinking beyond themselves. They're not saying to themselves, what about the insane person who also wants a weapon of mass destruction? What about the criminal, the gang member, who also wants the ability to kill hundreds in a matter of minutes? It's this self-orientation of conservatism that explains their view on guns, that explains their view on wages, on healthcare, on the environment. Sure, we can and have talked about each and every one of these issues individually. But have you ever found that it's hard to get a matter across which seems really easy for you to follow? Ever wonder why conservatives just aren't getting it? Have you heard the audio clip? That some hear as Laurel and others hear as Yanny? Okay. I know I'm going a bit pop culture here, but I think most of us have seen the social media, heard the social media audio clip. Sounds to me like Laurel, but sounds to others like Yanny. Well, like most mysteries, it really isn't a mystery. Science gives us an explanation. Low frequency gave the word Laurel. High frequency gave the word Yanny. And there's actually a wonderful thing in the New York Times where you can change the frequency filters, and it sounds more like Laurel and more like Yanny. And now, with training, my brain can hear both words. If I want to focus on Laurel, I hear Laurel. If I want to focus on Yanny, I can hear the Yanny. I think that's largely how we view political philosophy. It comes through our lens. People who watch CNBC and watch MSNBC, we hear Laurel. People who watch Fox hear Yanny to the same set of stimuli. Because our brains are always trying to make sense of the universe. Our brains are just like the brains of little children. I told you, we're always growing up as humans. We're never fully formed. And our brains rush to make intelligence out of gibberish. That's why when we hear a song and we don't know the words, we try to give it words, and it's often the wrong words. But once we focus on the words that we think that song is telling us, it's kind of hard to get us out of our brains. We are evolutionarily wired to make quick decisions based on missing information, to make a decision, fright or flight. So our brains rush to give meaning to things. And if conservatives run things through their lens, and even without being in their frontal cortex, they're thinking unconsciously, what does this do for me? How does this help me? Are they going to take away my gun? Have you ever noticed that no matter how many times you say, no, we don't want to take away your guns, we want to take away the guns of insane people, we want to take away the guns of criminals, conservatives keep coming back to, you're going to take my guns! No, we're not. They don't hear us. They don't hear us because their filter says, I will only look at things the way they affect me. I don't give a damn about saving other people's lives. I don't give a damn about my community. I don't care if an insane person has a bunch of guns. Are you going to take away my gun? Because they're self-centered, literally self-centered. That's their filter. No wonder they hear Yanny. They're only listening at certain frequencies. They're progressives that I would argue, it's less common, but only look at others. They're people who are so apt at self-sacrifice that they don't look out for themselves at all. I mean, some of them we might call saints, like Mother Teresa, who gave up her entire life to helping others. I think they're those who believe in socialism, and I am not a pure socialist. I believe in a mixture of socialism and capitalism. But a pure socialist would say, let's all just give everybody the same thing. That's fair. That's equal. And they don't look at any human striving. I think that's unrealistic. But again, it all depends on your filter. Next time you wonder why some people hear Laurel and some hear Yanny, why some people see Donald Trump and see corruption and lies, and other people say, he's sticking it to him, he's giving it back, he's... How much of that is internalized? How much of that is people putting their thoughts, their hopes, their dreams, their filter on top of Donald Trump? If your filter is selfishness, you're going to have much less problems with what Donald Trump does and is than if your filter is lawfulness or looking out for your community. Because if you're selfish and that's your pure vision, then it doesn't matter what's a lie and what's true. What's true in Donald Trump's world is whatever helps Donald Trump. What's false is whatever harms him. What's good is whatever lines the pocket of Donald Trump. Doesn't matter what the law is. What's bad is whatever harms Donald Trump. Trumpism is all about selfishness. It's kind of the essence of who he is. And selfishness is kind of the essence of what conservatism is. This is Mark Levine. We'll be right back for one final segment right after this.
He's a Harvard economist and a Yale lawyer. He does not keep up with the Kardashians. He's Mark Levine. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275. And now, the voice of reason in an unreasonable world, Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. In trying to understand conservative philosophy, conservative thought, it's important to understand the axioms on which it's based. The things that are at the heart, underneath, unconscious. Why don't conservatives mind when Trump sexually assaults dozens of women? Why don't they care when he doesn't pay people that he's ordered products from? Like that poor man who he ordered some 70 grand pianos and didn't pay back. Why don't they care about the people trapped by Trump University, right? Young people who were trying to achieve something and spent $30,000 on a completely worthless degree that often consisted of watching YouTube videos. Why don't they care that people are being tricked by fraud? Betsy DeVos, just recently, the education secretary, recently wanted to deregulate for-profit universities, otherwise known as scams. These universities that provide so little after charging you so much. Well, I think it again goes back to the basic philosophy of selfishness. Me-ism, Trumpism. Hey, you know, if people are stupid enough to buy my fraudulent product, joke's on them. They would have opposed the Food and Drug Administration. If people buy your snake oil and they think it's a cure for everything, that they're stupid. Let them buy it. If people aren't powerful enough to stop me from dumping my sludge and arsenic into the rivers, oh, well, I don't drink it. I'm the business owner. When you think about why Republicans are always looking out for corporations, it's easy when you understand that the way our corporate finance system works, our campaign finance system works, I should call it corporate finance system, is because it helps businesses make money by bribing politicians. Now, it's not a direct quid pro quo that happens to be still illegal. It's an implicit quid pro quo, right? You allow me to pollute, which saves me money. I don't have to clean the smokestack of all that dirty air and sludge that's going to cause cancer in my surrounding communities. And in return, Mr. Politician, I'll donate a bunch of money to your political campaign, and you'll win more easily. And then, if you're a true conservative, you'll get out of politics and become a lobbyist, and you'll make a ton of money doing nothing but trying to persuade people to help businesses allow more pollution. You see how it works. It always comes down to money. It always comes down to selfishness. It always comes down to helping yourself at the expense of others. Or it comes down to fear. It's not just helping yourself, but fear of others. Fear of people who are different from you. Not really believing in Jefferson's credo that all men are created equal. Yeah, okay, me, okay, my family, but not those people, not of that funny religion, not those people that have that weird sexual orientation, not those people that are from that country, not those people that are of a different color skin. It's important to understand what they believe in, because if you can limit the fear of conservatives, you can change their minds. For progressives, you appeal to love, you appeal to how it benefits the community. For conservatives, you appeal to self-interest and how to limit their fear. Because you gotta know where people are coming from. This is Mark Levine, signing off.